recovery community education as a way of building personal and social recovery for people with mental health and substance use issues. And delighted to be part of this consortium with a wonderful group of partners. Yeah, that's probably enough from us. Thank you.
Hi, I will introduce us next. I am Nikki Kilburn and I am from Penumbra in Scotland. We are a mental health organisation and we support people with their mental health and well-being. Work with folks that are chronically unwell to mild and moderate issues and concerns that they're experiencing. We are recovery focused. We facilitate people to identify what's going to be most helpful and useful to their recovery journey. And the EVECOM program has been exceptionally informative to us in the context of enabling people to have the knowledge and the skills to be empowered to find their own solutions and be able to share those with their peers, to pass on that knowledge so that we develop and create a community and a culture of awareness, understanding, and open dialogue on mental health and wellbeing. That's me. Lovely to see you all.
Well, I come in next. Hello, everybody. My name's Claire. This is my colleague Trina, and we are from the Recovery Academy of Ireland. And we're a small charity, and our primary work is to promote the idea of recovery through whether that's through education or various activities. Yeah, we work with various organisations, collaborating on different initiatives, and it's really good to see everybody and be here today.
Shall we go next, Lauri? So my name is Lisa and I'm from Finland together with Mr. Lauri Kuosmanen there. We are from the company, a small company called EviPro. What do we do, Lauri? We are a training and a small company doing a lot of training and teaching in the field of mental health and some other things and organizing some events which are to do with the better mental health and recovery.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, my name is Lauri. I'm Lisa's colleague from EviPro, and it's this project has been a wonderful experience for us as a private company. And in Finland, we have two partners who are actually been running the courses. They are two NGOs from Finland, SOSPED Foundation and Niemikoti Foundation. And I see Teppo from Niemikoti there. And hello, Teppo, good to see you. So this has been in Finland, this project has been done in close collaboration with these NGOs, but this has been a wonderful experience and good to see you all.
I'm just seeing, that some people are with more than one person in front of the screen, which is very good because we have actually way less people that are now in the room than have registered. Just to say, and there's still people coming in.
So
As I said, we're from Châteaucourt. We are here in France, also a very small organization. We exist since 2019, so we're also very young. We engage in sports and everything else after and with or around kind of to also to support people in different like in support them in daily life in legal issues, all kinds of things. It's practically this, and this project has for us been also a very good chance to kind of form more of a group here. And yes. So in France right now, we're just shortly before the elections or again the elections. So this is, I don't know, well, things will continue here. I must admit that I was very quick in my first presentation, and I'm kind of thinking whether we should open the room for a few minutes if there are questions, so we can things that might be. So just to explain how is the easiest to proceed is there's a little button with a heart that says reaction. When you push there, you can raise your hand. And then you will move up in the screen, and then that's the easiest. So if anybody has a question. There's questions in the chat. The question is if there was if there will be a recording available. And we had with the last multiplier, the same question came up. It would need I would say agreement from everybody that is here now. If there are no objections, then I would record to say it like that.
I think it's recording.
It seems that the recording is on already.
Yes, yes, I did started it on
That's
on
good.
my computer a few minutes ago. That's what I'm saying.
It might be good because the four multipliers combined will show a kind of an entire process. And if we've got the last one recorded, and then this one, people can see the impact of the program, and that might stimulate their interest in then delivering the program using the toolkit. So kind of makes sense to have it for posterity. Nobody seems to be saying no.
And let me share again my screen, maybe because then, wait, not this one, but then you can see again the courses. So you, no, that's not what I want. Wait, me and the technical side. I'm not getting to this yet.
We can see all your secrets now,
I
Sabina.
know. I know it's not so, but there are no secrets. Everything's fine. computers, you can't keep a secret on your computer. That's pretty impossible. This is what I wanted to share. So, this is what I wanted to share. So, this is the one I wanted to share. So, this is okay. Ah, I'm just saying that there's a message from Finland that in Finland there's already vacation,
And that was one of the reasons, maybe just to explain why we meet today, is because I was also afraid that next week most people will be in vacation. So, and it looks as if quite many are already in vacation. So I stop again, I would say, to share my screen. Is there any questions? Shall we continue? Okay. Shall we? We'll just pass on.
Apologies, Sabine. I think you might need to make us co-hosts so that we can share the screen.
If I manage to find the button how to do it, I will have the time to check on this.
I think it might work for Sabine already. It's letting me share the screen. So
this is yeah, because I did.
Can everybody see that?
Yes.
Yes.
So, welcome to the Connect Create Participate Training for Trainers Toolkit launch. As I already said, I'm Claire, and this is Trina, my colleague, and we're from the Recovery Academy of Ireland, and we're one of the partners on the FCOM project. So just a brief overview of the toolkit. This toolkit's been designed to assist in the delivery of the full FCOM project from start, sorry, full FCOM program from start to finish. It has come about as a result of feedback from all partners across the five sites. It's been designed so that communities can use the content, materials, and resources to develop a localized version of the program to provide adult education. Sorry, just before we change, there is a best practice guidelines that is due. Apologies for this backing. There's actually an immersive play taking place at the moment. That's part of the play. So we do apologize for that. So this is part of the best practice guidelines. This toolkit will be complemented by that, which is due to be launched at the end of the project in October. So I suppose traditionally recovery support is offered through therapeutic group settings. The FCOM program takes an emancipatory adult education approach to recovery. So that's what makes this different. It's important to note this is not a therapeutic group. It's an educational piece. So the purpose of the toolkit is to provide a step-by-step guide on how to deliver a full three-module program that improves mental health and well-being outcomes at individual and collective levels across communities. To build the capacity and awareness of local community partners to deliver emancipatory education. So who can use it? It's aimed at existing organisations that offer learning, education and community engagement initiatives, such as civil society groups and organisations, employment services, educational supports, mental health and addiction recovery support services. for individuals with lived experience of mental health or substance use issues, for professionals and advocates who work to support people, and newly developed community groups. Sorry. The overall objectives are to provide a clear step-by-step guide for organisations and facilitators to develop a programme that supports recovery in the community. It's to provide facilitators with resources for effective delivery of the programme using the CHIME framework, as already mentioned by Sabine, and a creative co-production methods. To enhance the facilitator participant experience through tools and tips that create a positive co-learning environment that encourages meaningful participation and self-empowerment. So it's not teacher-student, it's very much a co-production piece.
Sorry. Okay, so I will talk a little bit about what the toolkit content and resources are. So it's kind of just me running through a breakdown of what's included in the toolkit. Like Claire said earlier, so there will be best practice guidelines that are going to be developed as well. And this toolkit will be complementary to that. So we would see the toolkit as kind of what to do step by step, and the best practice guidelines as more of a how to do it. So more concerned with the process. So this is very, our aim is to be very clear and concise about each step of how to deliver the programme. So to begin with, we just give a bit of a background and context to the toolkit, which I think is really important, given, I suppose, the fact that this model is quite different to any other educational piece that's been delivered across mental health and educational support services. So as mentioned earlier, 5 partner organisations across Europe came together, and each of the organisations at this point has delivered 1 or more rounds of the 3 module course, and we're all currently evaluating it. So we've put through the first kind of the first stage of evaluation, and it'll be fully completed by the end of autumn this year. It's been a 3-year project, started with project development almost 3 years ago now when the team initially got together, and it's obviously in its evaluation stage now at this point. It was, the toolkit itself was created as a result of what the team, including participants from each of the 5 different sites, have experienced so far. So we have met with everybody numerous times. We've given out kind of surveys and different evaluation tools to kind of get an idea of what their experience was, how we could improve it, and how we could include that into the toolkit and also into the practice guidelines as well. And again, complementary to the best practice guidelines. So we would see this as having to be used at the same time as using the best practice guidelines to get the most out of it, really. So moving on from the background and the context, we'll go over kind of the models and the approaches that support emancipatory recovery education. Mentioned before was CHIMER. So using the model that is concerned with, I suppose, the group building their awareness around what connection means, hope, identity, meaning, empowerment, and then using a rights-based kind of approach to this. We also use participatory action research as well. So throughout the program, I mean, basically we're using the lived experience of people in the room to produce the 3rd module. So the 1st module, everybody gets into the space, and we're using the knowledge and the experience of everybody in that room to create the 3rd module. Co-production is also a huge part mentioned by Sabine and Claire already. So it's not, I suppose, the teacher and the student. Everybody is a learner in the space. We included in the toolkit the session topics with support and material to enhance the learning outcomes. So four of the main topics that are covered throughout the 6-week course is: what is recovery to start with? Transformation of power, the causes of mental distress, and the barriers to recovery. So again, taking that co-production approach, it's very much what comes out of the space itself, what's used. So there's not, we haven't included loads of background material because that would take away from the knowledge and the experience from the space itself. But there is, we have got, you know, kind of material that can be used to guide the process itself. We then provide session formats and layouts, so kind of what the ideal session would look like, and bearing in mind that there needs to be a certain level of flexibility and adaptability allowed because of the nature of the course itself. We're not rigid in process that needs to be followed. So it's what kind of comes out on the day, but obviously it's helpful to be able to have some sort of a structure. Then we move on to the step-by-step creative facilitator training content. So that will include different methods. Open dialogue was mentioned already. So that's one of the big kind of one of the main methods that would be used in the space. So we have a bit of kind of background material to use for that. And then also how to encourage maximum personal development through learning. So other group work, brainstorming, different activities that will support that. And we've sampled session plans as well to provide that kind of structure. So for somebody who's new to facilitation, new to design and session plans, this just gives that kind of support. And then we've got activities that can be used if needed. So it's just kind of, I suppose, being able to design your session plan with the most appropriate activities that will match up with what you're trying to get out of that session. We cover in the toolkit the aims of each module, all around personal development. And I suppose module one, the overall aim is that through the knowledge and experience in the room, we come up with a course that can be delivered in module three. It's pretty simple. That's the main overarching kind of module or overarching aim. Alongside that, you'll have a lot of personal development, community, recovery, capital building going on in the space. Module two is a train-to-trainer. So it's 2 days creative facilitation training so that people who took part in module one can take part in the creative facilitation skills training and apply to be a facilitator for the third module. The third module doesn't have any aims because that is created from module one. And then we cover how to develop a local program. So if there is somebody who has an interest in maybe delivering this in their local area, we go through the steps of how to plan, come up with kind of a bit of a strategic plan on how to develop a program, how to put out a call for expression of interest for partners. And then there's facilitator training that would take place. And then the development of the localized content using the resources that we provide. So, you know, depending on the cohort of people that you're working with or maybe the geographical area, it would be important to maybe adapt and create a bespoke training content and still using the general framework, but more localized. And then we kind of give evaluation support material so that you can evaluate. Obviously, it's very important to evaluate the program. And for the overall FCOM project, we would like to see more evaluations so that we can kind of build on the research. And with that, then anyone who delivers it would be able to join a European network of learners so that people can share the knowledge of and their experience of delivering the program and feedback. So the really important for, I suppose, the delivery of the program is to have an understanding of the overview of the framework and approaches that are used. I already mentioned the participatory action research. So that's, again, using people's participation and, I suppose, valuing their experience so that we can kind of come up with that third module. So it's everybody in the room working together to identify maybe kind of the needs and then the gaps and coming up with solutions themselves. So it's very much a collective approach. And then Chimer again. So I won't go over that because we've already discussed it, but it's included in the toolkit. And I think it is really important that everybody who does kind of have an interest in delivering this is familiar with those frameworks and approaches. Co-production obviously being another huge piece in the whole program. So you know, building on people's existing capabilities, recognizing that everyone in the space is an asset and has something to contribute. Mutuality is obviously really important, and the peer support piece as well. So like we said, there's no teacher-student dynamic going on. Everybody's a co-learner in the space, and we're facilitating that space rather than delivering some sort of a program to people. So that's the way we would see co-production for this, the FCOM model. Then we've got a very, very basic practical step-by-step. So preparing for your workshop, things like checklists, just to make sure, like the idea is that, you know, there'd be a mixture of people who could pick up this toolkit, people who already have existing experience of facilitation and people who are brand new to it. So we want to break it down as simple as we possibly can. So a checklist on how to kind of set the scene and make sure that you've got your preparations in order before you deliver the program. and the delivery of the workshop, again, going over the principles of the facilitation techniques, how to do session planning, and then create facilitation skills. So, you know, how to work with those approaches that we've mentioned, like open dialogue, group work, walk and debates, things like that. After the workshop then, so we've got the different tools that can be used to monitor and evaluate the program. So initially we had a questionnaire. So we're trying to simplify it down. It's a quite a long questionnaire. It's a 15 pager. So we're trying to simplify it down so that people can just use that throughout the whole program and evaluate it. The resources. So we've got at the end of the toolkit, we've got sample session plans and activities. So again, it breaks it down really easy that people can just use the templates and create their own session plans and kind of have a guide to use in order to do that.
So next steps, the toolkit will be disseminated alongside the best practice guidelines. That will be at the end of the project, which is around October time. So yes, that's kind of an overview on where we are at the moment with the toolkit. Again, any questions, throw them at us.
I have a question. So,
of course.
On one hand, now I'm biased, obviously, in favor of this discourse, but as I listen, I'm kind of just sitting back and thinking, but hey, what's different about discourse? We've got a million courses on recovery. Even in our own country, we're regurgitating a failed course on recovery principles that never demonstrated any impact on anybody, but yet we're still rolling it out again. So people roll out courses all the time that allegedly work or don't work and never prove they do. And there's millions of trainers that you can do. They're all over the, you know, they're, you know, it's, there's an avalanche of training. So I suppose my question, and it's not directed specifically at you, Claire and Trina, maybe to others, is, so what's different about this? You know, why would anybody want to go, oh, I want to do that one, I want to roll that out in my organization? Yeah, that's my question.
I think, like, from being a part of it is, and we've already spoken about this, and I think Sabine mentioned it earlier, it's that magic that you actually can't, it's very hard to put into a slide and explain what actually happens in the room. It's only by being a part of it and witnessing the transformation in people. How do you capture that? So I suppose that's my, I mean, I've been involved with a lot of kind of educational pieces. This has blown out of the park for me. I think this is a game changer, but that's just me, and I'm biased.
From our perspective in Scotland, what we have noticed, what is so innovative and different about this, is that it's actually enabling people across their own communities to create their own mental health solutions based on, you know, what has made a difference for them, coming together as experts by experience, being given the tools, the knowledges and the resources to lead on something, and then have the training to be and the strategical support to be able to think about, okay, how can you set this up autonomously in partnership with other spaces and maintain that sense of ownership. And for us, that is something that is really extraordinary, because as you've just described, Liam, there's just so many courses and resources out there on recovery, and predominantly they are hierarchical, service and provider led, and this is expert by experience, peer led, and it's an absolute game changer, because people actually know what they need. And what this actually purports is that give people the tools, the resources, and they will actually make it happen for themselves. It's not to undermine any other treatment or care that people might need, but this is a central component that can actually make a significant and profound sustainable difference, we believe. I'm very passionate about it, as you can hear.
Thanks, Nick.
I kind of feel alike. I cannot add so much, but I do think that the emancipatory piece, and also, you know, that you can do it autonomously. You can just, you know, once you've kind of eaten up the handbook, you know, once you've eaten the handbook, you know, and you master it somehow, you can generate pretty much of every kind of knowledge with it, because it's about how you do it and what is happening when you do it. And as Claire was saying, this is very hard to put into a slide, you know. Shall you do like a before and after picture? You know, it's really something different. You have to experience it. That's it.
Thanks.
I think Trina captured it when she said you didn't have outcomes for the third module. There's no expectations for that third module that people create. So I think that gives a little bit of flexibility, that there's a course that's going to be created by people that are kind of nothing to do with the facilitators in some way, at the end of it, and to live with that uncertainty, and to kind of pass that power over, I think is helpful. And that's different. I haven't seen that in kind of regular training or train the trainers, that there is a kind of an unknown that we're comfortable to sit with and see it develop. So I think that's what's different about this.
Cheers. Thanks. Yeah, just, it's probably, from my mind, it's probably good to talk about that. I think I'd said previously at a previous multiplier, what blows me away is that the recovery outcomes in terms of person's social recovery surpass any published clinical outcomes that I've ever read. And I'm supposed to be an academic who reads these things. So for me, the impact on people is absolutely huge. And that's good enough for me. But also the interesting thing, when we think about what's considered a post psychiatric paradigm in relation to mental health, substance use across the board, when we're moving away from psychiatry, or supposed to be, that when we can find an approach like this, an educational approach in the community, that can have such an impact on people, on their capacity, on their ability to determine their own futures, it's for me really important to see that there's something that is part of that new post psychiatric paradigm. Delighted with it, and of course, as I said, I'm biased. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Lisa.
Hello, I have my camera off because I'm moving house and it's chaos here. Nobody wants to see this. But I have a question around whether there'll be any connection to activism. So if there's themes and patterns that emerge around systemic and social justice issues, how will this then impact at a kind of higher level or a larger scale to reduce some of the traumatization that actually happens in the first place? That's my question.
Yeah, well, I suppose for me, I'm just thinking of the fact that the first module, you know, there is a discussion around the transformation of power and the different recovery models that exist out there already. And I haven't been a facilitator on the course, but I know the trauma has come up previously. So it's really open. So if the participants come up with that, what they want to create is a course around social action, that would be facilitated. It's really up to the participants, I suppose, if that's what the team is that comes out of it. You know, and that there's a group of people that do actually want to mobilize as a result of it. That's, you know, that's part of it. But the first module is obviously pretty set, very loose in what comes up. But the third module is where I suppose the real magic would probably happen then. And that can be something that's built around social action. Yeah, of course.
We've had two examples, Lisa, where their process outcomes, they're kind of moved kind of beyond as part of the project. So one example is where people living in homelessness wished to change the way they were perceived and the way that the services responded to their needs. So they asked, could they generate a program? A program that would be delivered by people living in homelessness to people living in homelessness, but also to the people who are managing the homeless services around Dublin. So you know, and a lot of what's coming up there, kind of underpinning what's coming up there in terms of what needs to be delivered, is social justice, is kind of switching the power from the homeless agency to the homeless person. So I think that's a good example of where it's been utilized to kind of overturn an existing system. And we're just going into the Irish prison service now as well with this same model, because they want to radically overhaul how they do recovery with substance use and mental health. So I think that's a good example of where this has got transferability. Yeah, they're two, for me, two good examples, and particularly two good examples of a process outcome.
Let me maybe just read. Depo wrote something in the chat. One angle why this could be an interesting way to empower people is that this whole theme, when everyone is a course participant, we work together and break the boundaries of who is who and what status is involved. All this knowledge and experience of joint development is growing all the time. And I think that's actually maybe something that is also at the heart of this program or this project. It is about learning together, and it's not about teaching things, you know. It's there is no teaching in this program. Even it's an educational program that is about hopefully also creating knowledge in some ways or skills or whatever, you know, but it's not about teaching. It's about facilitating, which is something fundamentally different. So, and then Lisa, I was just taking the advanced intentional peer support training in there was one person asking about doing intentional peer support in groups. And I instantly thought of, well, maybe this could go well together. You know, if you use like some things that come from this program here and put it together, you know, with maybe this could be something, I don't know.
Yeah, I can certainly see some overlaps and parallels between that kind of co-created knowledge and the reshifting of power that would make a lot of sense there. Yeah, I agree, Sabina.
Well, we've got a gang around the table, as it were. We're calling this train the trainer, yet we're not training anybody, and we're not teaching anybody, but we always fall back on train the trainer because we don't know what else to call it. Is there another terminology we can use rather than a train the trainer kind of toolkit? This isn't set in stone yet, so it's just good to get some feedback from people who just heard about it. And that's not the partners I'm asking. I'm asking all you other people. The partners have already talked about it.
makes sense to me.
It's hard. It's just because it kind of... It says it on the tin, but then the problem is if it says it on the tin, when that's not what happens, it's kind of, it's the wrong ingredients.
Just thinking, does it need to be as descriptive and literal as train the trainer? Could it be something like a statement like facilitate the difference? Facilitate change across communities. Emancipatory facilitation is quite nice. Yeah. This is just off the top of my head right now. I'm just thinking, like, can we actually have something that's conceptual because we're working with a conceptual knowledge base and framework.
Yeah.
And it helps to turn it around if we're moving away from that kind of teacher-pupil context, which everyone's touching on.
Yeah, and I think by calling a trainer, we're kind of skewing their expectations.
Yeah.
Lots of people will think, oh, I'm great trainer, that will give me the skills. But really, I don't think we're even capturing what is required to deliver the program and train the trainer.
And there's something quite generic about that as well, isn't it?
It's like a universal.
You can do a technical course on engineering and it's train the trainer.
Yeah, I agree.
It's worth thinking about it. Thanks for those suggestions, Nikki. It's definitely worth thinking about it because, like, sometimes it's the language that actually keeps us stuck in an old paradigm.
We've seen that
in the areas that this is geared towards substance use and mental health. People using the same language really just keeps us in the same paradigm. So we could be at risk of actually being complicit in that. This is directed at all of us, because we've agreed to go with Train the Trainer until now.
Martha wants to say something.
I've been calling it the wrong thing then. I've just been calling it facilitation training.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe I've just dropped it already.
In fairness, I've been calling it facilitation skills training. So, yeah, I'm kind of on the same page as you, Martha.
Yeah, but the toolkit in itself is, train to trainer toolkit. So, I don't know, facilitation skills toolkit.
I think so. Because that's what it is. You know, and even part of it is the difference between teaching and facilitation, which really strikes people. And again, shifts it.
Plus, I think I must say it's also about practice. It's the more you facilitate, the easier it will be in the, you know. So even if you take like a facilitation course and you think you're a facilitator, you will be a facilitator once you've practiced, and once you've been in situation when you had to respond to, or if you did session plans yourself and all of this, you know, this takes practice. So
facilitation practice skills, facilitation practice learning.
Yeah, I think these are all good.
I think practice is important, as it's everyone said. It's an iterative process. So you kind of get a guide and then you learn how to do it when you're doing it. And there's something about ensuring that people feel equipped for that, because it's really about going back to what happens in the room, isn't it? As Claire has said, you know, being able to work alongside all of those nuances.
Mm-hmm.
And that's often intuitive within itself, actually, that can be really hard to capture.
Yeah.
But you can develop and grow through that. And also, often there's a difference between hypervigilance and just being aware of what's going on. And when you first start out, you can be quite vigilant because you're anxious. And I think it's preparing people, you know, that this is practice, this is process, it happens as a live learning process.
I've had the advantage of doing the second day of it yesterday. So it was handing it over to people to facilitate. And we had a smaller group than we normally would have. So everybody got a chance to facilitate nearly twice. But there was some people who kind of were very hesitant. But then after, I think it's really nice to have the practice piece of the facilitation, because, you know, people kind of go, okay, this is what it's like to try and hold a group, or to kind of lead people through a part of a session So it's a real kind of, when people are putting themselves forward for the next part, they've had a little taster of, you know, is it my comfort zone? Is it not? You know, is it something I want to do or not?
Yeah. So I like that even at this stage of the development, that we're still open to maybe revising how we're calling or what we're calling the toolkit. I think the essence of the toolkit, which was well described and well presented from my point of view, will remain, but just the language and perhaps the terminology around it will possibly change with all those brilliant suggestions that have come in so far. We'll take that into our next, I think, participatory meeting. I can't remember when it is, but we'll take it into that, if that's okay, Trina and Claire, to add that to our mix of discussions, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, well, that's the PAR process in action, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it suits perfectly.
Brilliant. I've seen a question from Chinese, from Carol. The answer to when it'll be available is it'll be formally available probably a month after October, when Erasmus kind of give us the go ahead to kind of publish to the, you know, publicly. Hopefully that answers that question. And it'll be the same time as the practice guidelines and indeed the overall report and results. Somebody, I thought the question would come in. Cheers, Cara. I thought the question would come in. Trina and I were, what's happened this morning about, oh, this question is bound to come in. None of you are asking the question. So I'll ask it. You know, sometimes when you take something off the shelf, it's just something off the shelf. Here's a toolkit, go, you know, and do things with the toolkit, but it's not so straightforward. So I think one of the questions was, if people wanted to roll this out, a bit like they've done it in the homeless services now, and most of us have examples of where it's been rolled on later on, if people wanted to do that, how and what support or what resources available is the question. I suppose I'll continue with the answer, shall I, Trina? And the answer, I feel like I'm talking to myself here, it's really strange. And the answer is that we're hoping that the FCOM site and the FCOM partnership will become a kind of a, it won't, some projects die in the water as soon as they're finished. We've already demonstrated sustainability and at this stage in every single partnership, the initial program has already evolved and has moved. And I've given you two examples a minute ago. So most of us have no choice that we will continue and that other people that we work with are already doing this. So it got us thinking about perhaps we need to have the resource. So a lot of leftover Erasmus websites usually are just left there with a set of practice guidelines and kind of people move on. But we are thinking, and this is not something we've discussed amongst all of our partners fully yet, so it's just a thought in process, that maybe we need to provide some sort of process, some sort of kind of initial interacting with people, because some of the processes of the facilitation itself are very, very different to how people normally facilitate, and that's been pointed out to us. I'll give one example. Somebody stood up in a room in one of the courses and said, I want to go to the toilet, but I don't know who to ask. I'm not sure who's in charge, which was a wonderful proof of the facilitation process, meaning nobody was in charge, yet it was being well facilitated. So we're probably going to talk about some sort of process, some sort of offering of the key underpinning processes involved, because they need... Three people came forward there and said, you know, it's about practice, you know, and it is. And maybe people might want to experience that type of practice facilitation first before they're all out. So we may end up offering that just between us. We've probably got the capacity to do it in some form or fashion. But that's a That's an answer that yet has to be agreed and discussed further with the partnership.
Yeah, I kind of have been thinking about, you know, how can the project, you know, how can it be sustained, and you know, if there is a creation of a community of practitioners, you know, how to sustain this too. And then we're lucky these days, to be honest, that we can meet online like that, and that things are, you know, way more easier. And maybe there's some ideas how to do that in a good way.
Yeah, I think some sort of a learner's network would be great, where it's a space for reflection, because it is a practice kind of, that's the approach that you'd need to take is it's a really open, flexible kind of process that I think you might feel a bit unsure whether you're doing it the way you think you should be doing it. So I think to have some sort of a learner's network space where you can bounce ideas and reflections off other people who are delivering it, facilitating it as well, would be great.
Could be really useful as well to like have like champions within that, or you know, practice support. So you've got a bit of shadowing, a bit of guidance. If you're new, you just gain some experience, maybe different sessions for people to drop into, because there are some like core themes that come up when you start the process. There can be quite a lot of administration for people as well, if like maybe they're not used to that or familiar with it. So maybe some just help with the sort of like the practical aspects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also having people running things at the same time in different spaces, because it can be quite a lonely process if you're doing it on your own. And it's nice to know that there's other people out there in the same space.
I think this is a very important issue, because we're not all in cities either, you know. And then if you imagine you're doing this kind of program in a more rural setting, even in the city, you can really feel lonely very, very, very soon, certainly. I'm so happy and we're recording, to be honest. Are there any more thoughts or questions or ideas?
So one of the things that has come up for us as well is that, you know, what are the next steps for? So we've got three groups. We've got two that are affiliated with partners, with organizations, and then we have a group of independents that have come together, and now they're thinking about like, okay, what are their next steps across their communities? So giving them guidance around, or you can like partner with projects or other organizations, and it could be quite useful just to, I don't know, have some information or some support available, you know, for people to think about, okay, I really want to do this program in my community. Like you said, Sabina, if it's maybe in a rural area, like kind of like, how do you even reach out to people to build and create that relationship? And there will be something around that in the practice guidelines, but I think that it's really important, especially maybe if you're starting as a volunteer, that you still have boundaries in place and you still are getting a fair deal, to put it bluntly. Because there's also a risk where people, if you want to do something and you've got limited resources, that you'll end up throwing everything into it. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a fair deal.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And the other as well as the rural, there's also where you have within kind of one organization structure, how you can still do that. Because I know, for example, TIPO, maybe it, like, for example, in your example, it was within your organization, all of the people who took part were in your organization, which had a lot of advantages but also perhaps disadvantages as well. I don't know. There doesn't seem to be any disadvantages. But even some guidelines on that, when you want to do it within an organization, that would be useful to have in the guidelines as well, as much as in rural, because a lot of people would be thinking that, how do I do this in my organization?
Yeah, and we do have in the toolkit a section around how to develop that kind of affiliation with other partners and who would be maybe the most ideal partner, as in access to resources, whether that be the venue or funding, whatever it might be. It is for this type of program, it is, because you're probably, people will be doing it on quite a shoestring. It's important to utilize what is on offer in your area. So there is, we have got a section, but like you said, Nikki, I think the best practice guidelines will delve more into about the how to keep your boundaries and get a fair deal, I suppose. So hopefully the toolkit and the guidelines will complement each other around that area, because I think it is really important when you're developing the program that you get the right people involved.
I mean, that I think you also hit on something really important there about resources. We were paid to do this, of course we were, you know, and so there was money available to do this, which was absolutely fantastic. But for a lot of the offshoots where people continue to do that, that wasn't funded by the same. People were managing to do that within other resources. And the example you give Trina in how to capitalize on existing resources, because that's about utilizing social capital and recovery capital and kind of exchange, you know. For example, I've just remembered a week ago we asked you to book a place for a venue because you have a relationship with that venue, which meant that it cost us hardly anything, you know, using that kind of way of rolling out. And I know some people have rolled this course out afterwards for almost nothing apart from paying the facilitators to, you know, as people should be paid to roll it out. So I think that's quite, I think that's a great idea to have that in there, because a lot of training looks cool and it's all glossy and all beautiful and cost a fortune and doesn't necessarily have impacts, but this can be delivered cheap.
Yeah, if you utilize what you've got already and the assets that you have in the community. So that's part of that is community mapping and finding out what can we use that's already here.
I think Sabina, I think one of your examples of actually utilizing and finding all sorts of way of getting little bits of money out of the municipality for, you know, we had a venue was one way you got funded for that you didn't have to pay for, and a couple of other little things. And that's really important because it gets people thinking creatively, because the course is creative and then people think community creativity to kind of
identify. I must say that this model, you know, we were able to use rooms from the municipality, you know, which on the one hand, yes, is like some, as if there was some money coming from there because you don't have to look for rooms or pay for rent. But then I think the idea of doing it, you know, in spaces that are from the municipality is also a very good idea in general, because then you go out more to the general public, you know, kind of. Then, and you know, in some places maybe it's better not to do so and look more for private spaces rather. It depends on where you're at and what kind of people you will have in the course too, and on the content, I think a bit. So
I think a lot of this does come down to resources though, doesn't it? And, you know, people will have access to different things, and then it's just that awareness of, like, if folks are on the lower end of the scale, and that can be also down to, you need to have the confidence and the self-esteem and the self-worth to kind of reach out for and ask for things as well. And I think that's really important and really valuable, and thinking, you know, that's a component to add in to the practice guidelines of, you know, how to have those conversations and how to reach out and how to know that you have something really valuable, and that opportunity for developing and building, because often this is dependent on volunteers, and that's great, but people also need to pay the bills and they need to eat. And they need to feel that there's progression. Not everyone, but for a lot of people, you know, if this can create meaningful employment in the future, what does that look like? What does that mean?
Which is something that we did see when we tried to get, you know, feedback from people. We kind of discovered that a lot of people had actually moved on in a good way, but it meant they couldn't really contribute to the project too much anymore because they'd obviously moved on. So we were trying to say, okay, we'll take the good with the bad there. But if we could offer, you know, it is about resources. So if you don't have the resources, it's hard to kind of expect people to stay
engaged
and to continue on with it. So, and I think as well, like the project lead from the start of the, you know, module one, and it has definitely happened, I know in Ireland for sure, Emeritus just explained it there, that like you're handing the baton over then to the leaders in part in module three, but it's really important to stay involved and I suppose be able to support them with how to recruit for module three, how to get the word out there and maybe help to build relationships with the facilitators and other organizations as well. So it's very much about sharing that knowledge, I think.
And that is just getting me to the point to also to realize that the work around organizing, doing the courses, facilitating the courses, there's a lot of relational work involved, which is usually quite consuming a bit, or at least I feel often very that it's, you know, something that is consuming. So this must be taken into account too when you, for instance, want to apply for funding, that you have to keep in mind that you have to give some time to this too, for instance. And now I'm just looking at the clock and I'm seeing that we have like 12 minutes left. And I just want to say we had people come and go. So even though it was always around a certain number, there was coming and going, and some are with a few in front of the screen, just to say this again. I don't know how to, I don't know. I think if everybody agrees, I think we could even discuss a couple more minutes because it is quite fruitful what we're talking about.
Well, one of the things that Marta and Nikki touched on, similar but different ways, that kind of that notion of paying it forward, that notion of for people who want to, you know, it's difficult to come in and do any sort of process cold, but two things have kind of happened. And some people have come to us and said, oh we want to do that, we're just going to go and do that, can we do that, you know, and we just want your toolkit. That might be one thing people have said. And but usually some of those people have actually gone through the entire process. So they've already become facilitators. So that's one way of kind of people just roll then because they've come from wherever they've come from and now they're actually rolling the course. So it's just to say that kind of paying it forward so far seems to be happening where you've got good experienced people already. They've been through the process, then they're rolling it out. But then the other one is where in some cases, if you've got networked relationships already set up, that one person from an organization who's kind of rolling this out regularly, who's used to doing this, who facilitates it regularly, could quite conceivably get involved with the organization or organizations who's deciding to do it and become one of the co-facilitators or the co-producers of that process. And that seems to have given people I don't know, that extra bit of motivation, extra bit of confidence to say, yeah, oh, grand, yeah, thank you, we'll roll with it. And so far in our experience is that the person who came from, say, the recovery college didn't really have much to do with the actual rollout. It was really just that initial saying, we support this, we will be part of the co-production. But the people in the organization are rolling it out, they ran with it, you know. And really the recovery college person was a just had a nice time sailing along with the rollout, as opposed to necessarily having to do some significant facilitation themselves. So that seemed to be another good way of it rolling out. You might disagree with me on that, Marta. You were one of those sailors.
I was going to, but I was wondering, am I frozen? Because I look frozen, but I'm picking up everybody. Okay. The internet in DC is bad today. I think, and it's the kind of not stepping on people's toes and jumping in either, and leaving the space to be able to for people to do it, and then people thinking, oh yeah, we did session plannings, okay, that's where we're starting, or we're breaking it down into what are we looking for the whole course for people, what do we call it, and literally sitting on your hands and just being there while they work through it. But yeah, no, I was busy, Liam, obviously very busy.
Are you gone, Sabina and John? Or oh, you're back.
I'm not gone. I just wanted, because we have, I have a couple of people behind me, so I thought, I, you know.
Is that Jacob?
No, that's.
No.
I just want to tell you, my name is Catherine, and I'm very glad to go back in Ireland because I've already been there. With a camping car.
Okay, Katja. Well, hopefully.
Everywhere. In
we might see. We just might see you there in October.
We had some English speaking people too.
Well, you should try and convince Sabina that you're one of the team coming to Dublin in October.
So
she just called shotgun.
Well,
we seem to have come to an end in terms of conversation.
That's how I feel about it too, and I want to thank everybody for being here today. I want to apologize that I was so fast in the beginning. I was kind of excited and wanted to show off with all the technical stuff in the camera. It's my first time I did right. Some kind of event. So we recorded it, but not all of it, but most of it. So that way we save it, which is really good. Yeah, I would say that's it. And then we have the 5 minutes pause now. If this is all right,
good idea. Guys. Thank you so much, Sabina and John, for hosting, and Trina and Claire for very informative presentation, and to everybody here for even moving us more forward. Thank you.
And there's still people coming. That's so great.
The time zone messed me up, Sabina, because the email came through as 12 o'clock, but that was, I think, 12 o'clock France.
Oh, so yes. I think okay,
messing my head a little bit.
Okay.
But anyway,
yeah, but
you'll have the recording, Shauna.
Yes, I missed it.
The recording will be there.
I want to see it now.
Yeah, and Carmen. No, sorry about that.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Sabine and John.
Thank you very much, folks.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Wait. Yeah. We have to take a. Martha did take pictures, I hope so.
I hope they're on Twitter already.
Okay.